Your mind won't stop. The racing thoughts, the worry that follows you into the night, the sense that no matter how much you accomplish, real peace just stays out of your reach. What if the answer isn't thinking harder, but learning to quiet the mind entirely? Today's guest has spent nearly four decades at the crossroads of two great traditions, Western psychotherapy and Eastern meditation. Helping thousands of people find genuine calmness and, more than that, truly learning how to flourish. He's here today to show us the real inner peace, what it looks like, how it feels, and how any of us can begin to find it. Now, my guest today is one of the most respected voices in the meeting point of psychology and contemplative wisdom. Dr. Jeffrey Rubin is a psychotherapist in New York City and Belford Hills, a graduate of Princeton and Columbia, and the author of eight acclaimed books, including The Art of Flourishing, Psychotherapy, and Buddhism. He is widely regarded as one of the leading authorities in integrated meditation and psychotherapy, and he has created an approach he calls meditative psychotherapy. His work has been featured in the New York Times Magazine, and he's taught everywhere from the United Nations to the Islam Institute. Now, Dr. Rubin, welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me, Stacey. Look forward to talking to you.
I look forward to talking to you. So let's start with something almost everyone listening is feeling right now. So many of us live with a mind that just won't quiet down. The worry, the racing thoughts, the constant mental noise. As someone who spent decades studying both psychotherapy and meditative side of this, what actually is happening when our minds run away with us?
At least two things. We have the external trigger, the negative news, which we're consulting constantly, partially, I think, to make sense of it. So in a way, the way we're trying to cure it ends up aggravating us because we keep checking our phones, we keep watching the news, and we get more and more jammed, we get more and more jacked up, we get overwhelmed. So one crucial thing is titrating your involvement with that, yes, looking at that a little bit less. Not looking at it as at night as much, you know, preserving yourself so you can sort of relax, transition into going to sleep. Another important thing is realizing that there's often two things. There's the news and the trigger of that, and then there's our reaction to it. And both end up trapping us, both. Yes. There's the negative news, whether it's war, political stuff that triggers you. And then we have our emotional reaction to that. And so part of de-stressing is uncoupling those two. There's the news and there's our reaction. Our reaction is more within our hands. The news is not in our hands.
Right. And why do so many people, like even successful, capable people, struggle with finding real peace?
One reason is we often learn not to trust ourselves. We often learn to look outside. You know, yeah, with the local women's or men's Facebook group, with people online telling us what to eat and how to live, it becomes very confusing because authorities tell us completely different things. High protein diet, not high protein diet, smoothies. Chinese medicine doesn't like smoothies. It thinks it's too cold and not good for nutrition. So we get very confused. And also, we're very external. We don't tune into ourselves. I was listening to a radio program as I was driving home today, and the person was saying, I can tell you what I've eaten. I've created a cookbook, but you have to check it out with your own body. That's what you need to know. So we all have to learn to cultivate more self-trust.
Yes. I agree 100%. Now, your whole life's work has been bringing together two worlds that most people keep separate. You spent your career integrating Western psychotherapy with Eastern meditation. Like, what does each tradition understand that the other misses?
That's a great question. They all have wonderful wisdom, and both have blindness. And the interesting thing is each tradition speaks to the blindness of the other. So meditation is very good at slowing down the mind, cultivating heightened moment-to-moment presence and attention, mm-hmm, but it's not interested in development. It's not interested in human development. Therefore, it's not interested in human history. Therefore, it's not interested in earlier feelings, wounds, traumas that someone may have had that also have to be understood and worked with to free the person and to lessen their pain.
Right.
Western therapy, on the other hand, is very good with that end of it, but is less good cultivating this kind of meditative concentration and focus. And if we meditative therapy, which you mentioned before, is using Eastern or even Western, because in some Western religious traditions, they do have, whether it's centering prayer or other things, they do have ways of calming us down and focusing us. So whatever technique that you already use out there that calms you, focuses you, and then combine that with the Western focus on what does this mean? We need meaning. I call it the mindfulness, the marriage of mindfulness and meaning. Just mindfulness is not enough. Just figuring out the meaning, but not having that presence is not enough. But when you put the two together, they're richer than either one pursued alone.
That's a great analysis. I like that a lot. Now, what happens when you bring them together and what becomes possible in someone's healing and growth that neither could offer alone?
Number one, we often think our feelings. Oh, I'm anxious. Oh, I'm sad. But we're not really feeling it at that moment in the body. Let me give an example to make it easier for the audience. So after a long day in the city years ago, I was living on Long Island, and I got on LIRR, and I had a headache. And at first I tried to avoid it, tried to read, massage my shoulders. I wondered if it was my posture, sitting all day in the same position. And then I said, I did a counterintuitive thing. Let's meditate. So I start to meditate. And at first it feels worse because I begin to become aware of the sensations.
Right.
And then a fascinating thing happened. I noticed that there was a space between the pain. It was like vibratory pain, and there was a space between then the pain, then the space. But if I was narrating it to someone, I'd say, oh, I have a headache, like it's this frozen, stuck thing. But when I actually looked at it and felt it, there was space between. And then as I meditated, I think the ride was 45 minutes or so, after a while, the spaces grew longer and longer between the pain. And then where's the headache? And I didn't take anything. So often when we look directly at our experience, things change. Western therapy is not as good at this as Eastern meditative disciplines, because the Eastern meditative cultivate this really focused awareness and somatic awareness, where you're going into your body and you're actually feeling it. You can imagine, people out there, that this is good for things like eating. So when I'm working with someone on eating, I might say, you know, keep a journal of what you eat. And I might say, don't judge yourself. Eat whatever you're going to eat the first few days, but notice more. Notice right before you ate. Notice while you're eating how you feel. Notice afterwards. Because often we're just doing this stuff mindlessly and not noticing its impact on us.
Yes. That's so true. Now, one of your books is called The Art of Flourishing, and I love that word, flourishing. It's so much more than just not struggling. Now, what does it actually mean to, like, flourish?
It's a great question. So I had to think about happiness a lot when I wrote this book, and there was this movement, the happiness movement. Now, I wrote a piece online that you can look, anyone can look at for free, The Unhappy Truth About Positive Psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is, because many people are pretty miserable these days, there's a big focus on escaping from that. And so people want to feel good and they want to feel happy. Now, I like feeling happy as much as the next person, but I don't spend 5 seconds a year trying to be happy, because trying to be happy is fickle. Then if you have, what if your neighbor's sick and you're going to clean their bathroom for them? Or what if your aunt has to be, you know, suddenly go to the hospital? You're not going to feel good, but you're doing good.
Yeah.
So from the philosopher Aristotle, I got the idea. He called it eudaimonia, flourishing, and it meant to live and fare well. It wasn't to feel good. But you will feel good if you flourish. If I take care of my neighbor, if I call my elderly relative who's alone, if I'm, get involved in service, if I help others, I will actually feel better, but I'm not focused on my happiness.
Right.
So flourishing is different. It's doing the right thing. It's being ethical. It's bringing spirituality down to earth and into your life. It's handling emotions wisely. It's creating harmony between mind and body. It's appreciating the beauty in the world. And I don't just mean faces and bodies. I mean beautiful souls. Mm-hmm. I mean beautiful performances, beauty in nature. So there are all sorts of ways, no matter what our political beliefs, no matter what our education, no matter what our financial situation, we can do some of this stuff and no one can interfere with that. And then we can flourish a little bit more in daily life.
I love that. Now, how is it different from just being successful or just being happy?
Well, the happy I alluded to before, let's say a little bit more about that, and then we'll go into the successful. So happy is about me feeling good now.
Okay.
Again, great, important, but we don't need that in the world right now.
Right.
I have a Buddha outside, and it has a chip on the eye, and I call it the tear of the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
And when you and I were speaking earlier, we were speaking about tears. And
yeah.
So the world is crying right now. The world is a beautiful place, but it's also a hurting place. I think
yeah.
we need to not deny either side. We need to not deny the gloriousness of the world every day, moment to moment. And we also need to face the hurting in the world right now. The
right.
emotional hurting also, as well as the people that are struggling financially and so forth, and in war and all of that. And so I think rather than being happy, if we focus on living the right way, according to
yeah.
our values, that's another thing. Living our values, that's really crucial in flourishing, is we all have a core set of values, and are we living them or are we not? Is there a gap between our cherished values and the way we live? When we narrow that gap and we live according to our cherished values, we will feel happy, but not by trying to, flourish, by which I mean do the right thing and live correctly, live wisely. So that's in terms of the happiness. Now, the success is great, but it's only one piece of the pie. Again, my success, my
right.
portfolio. It's great. It's important. I'm not trying to put it down, but there are a lot of other things. I was a basketball player growing up, and the greatest player when I was a kid was maybe arguably the GOAT, Oscar Robertson. And he told Bill Bradley, the basketball player, that the great players make their teammates better. I never forgot that. I learned that as a teenager. So part of flourishing to me is not just my success, but uplifting everyone, potentially uplifting everyone I meet. And that includes
right.
the 17-year-old young adult and the health food store, you know, who's checking my stuff out. And how did your driving test go? How is it going with your boyfriend? It's
yeah.
it's taking daily life and not rushing past that into only my success, but uplifting everyone we meet as best as we can.
Right. I love that. And for the person who is listening, who feels like they're getting through life, but they're not really thriving, like, where do you even begin?
That's a great question, and many of us are feeling that. First of all, try to remember you're not alone. In John Lennon's Double Fantasy album, which I think came out after he died, there was a line about that. You know, you're not alone. You're not in this alone. You're not the only one, is what he said. You're not the only one. It's a useful
right.
mantra. You're not the only one. Others are feeling
right.
this. It doesn't take away your pain, but it takes away the fantasy that you're the only one, which can morph into you're bad, you're shameful because you're struggling. Everyone is struggling to a certain extent. If they act like they're not, they're hiding something or they're not in touch with it. But everyone has different skeletons in the closet and challenges. So just start with a little bit of patience with yourself, a little bit of self-compassion. And then you start small and start near you. What would be one half step you could take to be a little bit more yourself? Maybe
right.
it's to stop for 5 minutes and pray. Stop for
yeah.
5 minutes and meditate. Not 45, not an hour, not a Buddhist retreat. I mean, you can do any of that. Not mass, not church. You can do all of that. But
yeah.
what's 2 minutes, 5 minutes you can do right now.
Mm-hmm.
What can you bring into your life that works for you? What can you take out of your life that's dragging you down? Where can you free up a little bit of time? Everyone says they don't have time, but we have time to breathe. And if we begin to slow down and listen to our breath and have longer, it's called a Alangana practice in yoga. If we have longer, slightly longer exhales, that's calming. If we calm ourselves, we're a little clearer. If we're a little clearer, we make wiser decisions. If we make wiser decisions, we don't create unnecessary mischief for ourselves. And then we set up a virtuous circle, what Bill Bradley in one of his books calls a virtuous circle instead of a vicious cycle. Right. Many of us are in a vicious cycle of fatigue, so we have more carbs, so then we fall asleep late afternoon, then we miss spin class or yoga class, and it's just a vicious cycle. Then we have self-contempt. Mm-hmm. Then we attack ourselves. So we want to try to do the first half a step towards starting to go towards this virtuous circle, by which I mean what affirms you, what respects you, what helps you be the kind of person you really want to be.
I love that. Oh, that's so powerful. And for the listeners out there, if your mind has been racing and you're longing for real lasting peace, this is the conversation that you've been needing. Follow The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi right now. Every week, we bring you the wise voices who help you calm your mind, heal, and truly flourish. Now, you've studied the deep, contemplative, and mystical traditions across cultures and faiths, the ones that have explored the inner life for centuries. What have these traditions understood about the human mind and spirit that we're only now starting to rediscover?
Great question. The first thing, Stacey, is the traditions, and we, the participants, tend to sometimes be, in the Buddhist sense, too attached.
Mm-hmm.
So we take the tradition that's spoken to us. It could be Buddhism. It could be Hinduism. It could be Sufism. It could be psychotherapy. It could be somatic disciplines. And we make that everything, which is wonderful on one level because it helps us be deeper and go somewhere with the path. But then we close out other things. And one of my great, great, great friends and teachers, he's deceased, unfortunately, Joel Kramer, is my first yoga teacher. He was on the West Coast. He died a few years ago at 84. He said to me, Jeffrey, dive into whatever you dive into, but always try to see the edges, the limits of the systems that you study. It was great advice. And so whatever I study, I try to see what it illuminates, and I try to see the questions it doesn't ask, the places it doesn't go to, and then I try to see what other traditions might supplement that. Bruce Lee was actually very good with this. He tried to create an open system that drew on the best from all sorts of different healing and martial traditions. He had following saying above the yin-yang symbol in his dojo in Oakland and then in L.A. He said, research your own experience, absorb what's useful, reject what's useless, and add what is specifically your own. Let me repeat. Research your own experience. That goes back to what we said about self-trust. Try out the diet. I often won't talk in therapy about juicing or diet or anything. I certainly won't talk about it until I've really tested it over a long time and worked with it. Qigong and things like that I'm interested in now. I was interested in yoga and Buddhist meditation. I still am. But in recent years, much more these Chinese internal practices, Qigong and other stuff like that, yin-yang padding, all sorts of stuff like that. But I do it for a long time because then you also know the possible resistances people may have, the possible challenges people have. And then you can speak to that if they explore these things. So research your own experience. Absorb what's useful, reject what's useless, and add what is specifically your own. I love add what is your own, because that leaves room for the audience's own creativity to come in. Whatever Stacey and I say today, people, you will have something. It could be a drawing. It could be sewing. It could be pickleball. You will have something outside of what we talk about. If that speaks to you, keep it in your life and build on it. Don't make our framework yours, only yours, because then you leave out what you've uniquely discovered. I always say this right. When I speak publicly, Stacey, that there'll be whatever I say that resonates, draw on, I say to the audience, and whatever questions you have or alternative thoughts, just trust that. It doesn't mean it's right, but it could be a seedbed of something new that's good for you.
Right. I love that. Now, what can seekers of every background, you know, or no particular background learn, you know, from that, you know, ancient contemplative wisdom about finding meaning, stillness, and connection in a noisy modern world?
It tends to be a very different value system than our world, which is very bottom line, you know, chop chop, bullet points, get to the point. What's in it for me? I'm repeating the kinds of things that are in the air that many of you have faced. I have this as a writer. What's in it for me, what you're writing? And I don't usually even respond. I just think to myself, I'm just trying to honestly express what I've seen to help people. But there's a lot of attitudes that circulate. And there's another way of living outside a lot of that. And these traditions speak to that. Quality of life, slowing down. Value rather than quantity, quality of your life, not just your likes on a social media platform. And I think we can't, as the Dalai Lama says in a book in 1999, Ethics for New Millennium, he said, we can't magically go back to a pre-modern time. He said, In Tibet, they have heating blankets and cell phones. And so I'm not saying throw out what works. I'm talking about notice the limitations of our current culture, be honest about it, no, not judgmental, honest, and look to other traditions, religious, spiritual, psychological, artistic, to see what will supplement and enrich what you're already doing in your life.
Right.
Because these other traditions tend to have very different values.
Mm-hmm.
It's quality, it's meaning, it's honesty, it's compassion. It's how you treat others, and we need to bring that back in. Let me use a word that we never hear any. People don't say he's an honorable man or an honorable woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. But that could be a cherished value, that you know what that person says is true. My grandfather came from Vilnius, and it's the same story as you told me before about your dad. Came over with no money, humble, benevolent, kindest person I ever met. And it's just a different value system. And we have to not laugh at that, but see how we can integrate some of that in our own fast-paced, multitasking contemporary lives.
Yes, I agree. Now let's make this practical, because I know people are listening and thinking, I want that peace, but how?
One crucial thing that I saw years ago was I had a weekly basketball game with my best friend in the city. And when you build in showering, subway time, it took 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And I would do it in the middle of the day. But I always did it Monday, Wednesday, and then we'd play Saturday. And I noticed it happened every week. This is in Flourishing. I mentioned this in The Art of Flourishing. It happened every week. I was also studying Tai Chi. I was a total beginner. To do the form multiple times over and over and over, because I was only a beginner, it would take about 10 or 12 minutes. And sometimes I would do it, sometimes I wouldn't do it.
Right.
So I got curious, this thing that takes a few hours, I do regularly, basketball. This thing that takes 10 or 12 minutes, I do irregularly. What's the difference? And when I was writing Art of Flourishing, I remembered this story, and it was like a huge epiphany. The difference was the basketball was built in, the Tai Chi was fitted in. I can help all of you flourish right now, and I pretty much guarantee it. Take a piece of paper, write down the middle of the page, on the left side, what's working in your life. Friends, you see your friends weekly, you keep in touch with them. Gym, whatever it is, supporting your kids, whatever it is. Good connection with your husband or your wife or your boyfriend or girlfriend. On the other side, write what's disappointing you and what's not working. Mm-hmm. I need to declutter. I'm irregular about exercise. I have great New Year's resolutions. I'm not quite following through. I stress eat, whatever it is. And again, to go back to what we said before, if any of those click, don't beat yourself up. You're not the only one, but that's where you start. We start where we are. Okay. Yes. So what you need to do is figure out what helps you flourish on another piece of paper. What helps me flourish? When do I feel I'm really me? When do I feel alive and vital? And what you need to do is move things from column on the right side to the left side, and then you'll flourish more. And the one trick is build it in, don't fit it in.
Exactly.
Everything that's built in tends to fall away some of the time. You're going to meditate after this, after you hear this. But then a phone call comes, or you have to pay a bill, or someone knocks at the door. But that which is built in, the appointment that you have with the doctor is, or the appointment you have with your kid to do homework, it's built in, it's unquestioned, it'll happen. So take what you're fitting into your life and try to build it into your life. That's really crucial.
Right. Oh, I love that. And for someone who's never really meditated or even you know, has tried and felt like they can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do they start?
Listening to music. Listen to their favorite music, but hear it. Don't just listen to it. I've said that to teenagers who've wanted to calm down. I say, take your favorite. I don't care if it's heavy metal. I don't care what it is. And really listen to it. That's a listening meditation. We need to change the word, in my opinion, from meditation to meditative.
Yes.
Meditative is anything we do with the meditative spirit. So you could be at a retreat and not be meditative because you're writing things down and you're thinking about your work back coming home or in the past, you're replaying stuff. Or you could be, frankly, in prison and be meditative if you're in the present moment. So one trick is take like 5 minutes a day and listen to music or walk mindfully or sit or just sit still and try to notice the experience of the rising and the falling of your abdomen, like the sea going in and the sea going out. Start small. And the trick is, only do as much. Look, if you do more, it'll help. Just like if you play tennis more or if you weight train more, you'll see results more quickly. But if I say that to people, what you'll do is 20 minutes of meditation today. You get excited about this meeting between Stacy and I. And then the next day you'll do it. And the next day you won't really think anything's happening. And your schedule's too busy to do something when nothing's happening. And you'll stop. I've seen it over decades, because I also teach meditation. I've seen it over decades. So the trick is do the most you can do every day. If that's 5 minutes, do 5 minutes every day. If it's 20, but don't do 20 if you can't do 20 every day. Do 5 or 10. Get it built in and then add one or two a day, one or two a week, and gradually you build up.
I love that. Now, what are the simplest, most doable practices for beginning to quiet the mind and find a little more stillness?
I think yogic breathing and meditation. Can we do something right now? Would that be okay for you in the audience?
Yeah, I would love that. Yes, okay. Definitely.
So get in a physically comfortable position, everyone. Back reasonably straight. Just rest your hands with, you know, in your lap. Well, one thumb, let's say your left thumb touching the nail of your right hand. Just keep them still. And just become aware of your breathing process. Not good, not bad. Just feel your breath. Now, let's breathe through the nose, so close your mouth. In through the nose, out through the nose. And make your exhale gentle and fine, like we've all created a garden together, we're walking through the garden, there are new shoots, and we don't want to crush anything. And make your exhale a little longer than your inhale and very soft and relaxed. Let's do a few breaths like that together. Gently and slowly open your eyes and return your attention to the room. How do you feel?
I feel very relaxed. I feel like I've gotten myself to a level of calmness, especially when we took the longer breaths out and we slowed them down and we made them longer than the inhales. I felt my body starting to be more relaxed and also more aware of what was going on in my surroundings.
Exactly. How long did we do? I didn't time it. It's very little time. And people say, I don't have time. Watch 5 minutes less of your phone. Do anything, you know, just find a minute, find 2 minutes and you can do it. Do 12 breaths like that. So I might start 12 breaths like that. Mouth closed, breathing through the nose and softening the exhale. So think of it, breathing in, everything expands. Breathing out, you gently press your abdomen towards your spine, gently. Maybe 12 breaths like that. And if you like it, maybe do it twice a day. So that's a breathing exercise. Let's do a meditation exercise. Okay. So get in a physically comfortable position again. Again, mouth closed, breathing through the nose. And just open to sound. Could be an air conditioning, could be rain on the rooftop, could be a car outside, could be someone watching TV in the next room. Just open to the sound and play with the sound. Is not an interference to us meditating. It's not an interference to us listening to this program. It's an object we could pay attention to. An object that can help us focus the mind. So in that spirit, with kind of kind-hearted attention, I just want you to open to any sound you hear. I want you to feel it, experience it, and let it wash over you. And then begin again, just opening to any sound that's there. Feeling it, greeting it kindly, and letting it touch you. Let's do some movements like that, some breaths like that. If your mind wanders, which is really natural, gently and without judgment, return to paying attention to sound. If you don't hear any sound, don't fret, don't judge, don't worry. Just listen to the sound of silence. Just listen to what the silence sounds like. There can be relaxed silences. There can be nervous silences. There can be generative silences that feel spacious. Just feel whatever is there. So you have two objects of focus, sound or silence. Let's continue. Gently and slowly open your eyes and return your attention to the room. How do you feel after that?
I feel relaxed. I also realize that I'm surrounded by a world of humanity, that life is, that there is another, there is, how should I say this? That I felt the silence and calmness around me, but yet when I started to hear other noises, at first it was complete silence. Then the noises from outside I connected with, and I realized that there is, that humanity surrounds me, if that makes sense.
Totally. And that can eventually lead to a more, both more, what they call in Zen, intimacy, where you're really feeling the humanity, you're part of it, you're connected, there's less separation, and then more harmony with it. And this is happening all the time. We're walking in New York City, and someone could bemoan, there's someone honking at someone else, or someone could hear the natural symphony of sounds that are going on. And each one, that's what I said before, there's the experience and there's our relation to it. And if we change our relationship to it, what gets us tight can make us smile. Or what gets us tight can be an invitation to opening up and feeling more connection with and harmony with.
I like that. That was very relaxing, and that was also very, it brought my level of awareness up.
Sometimes I do this when I teach therapists. I've taught a course, meditation and psychoanalytic listening. The idea being if therapists meditate, they'd listen better. And the people come in as mature adults, you know, I guess from 25 to 75 years of age. And they're aware people, and they've been in therapy, and they've done spiritual work, some of them. And they inevitably say, we'll do longer meditation because we have more time, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever. And they say, oh my God, I came in here thinking I was present, and I wasn't present at all at the level that I'm present now.
Right.
So then they have an experiential knowing, oh my God, greater connection to myself is possible. And that plants a seed. Oh, if I did these awareness practices from the East or the West,
yes,
maybe my own level of depth and openness could, and feeling. If you said to me, Jeffrey, you've mentioned twice these Chinese practices, what have you gotten? I've gotten different things, Stacy. And one of them is, I jokingly call it the feminization of Jeffrey. If you tell me a sad story, I feel sensations in my body. Now, I've heard this for years from my female friends, that they're feeling stuff in their body. I've heard this from body workers. I feel a pain in the area I'm going to work on. And that's part of what tells them how to know where to work. But yes, now I have that, and I feel inner sensations bubbling around. So I'm literally becoming more sensitive from these practices. So then I'm not doing work. I'm exploring this path that's making me more sensitive and alive.
Right. I love that. I love that. That's amazing. What, how effective it is also. Now, what would you say to the person who feels too busy, too anxious, or too skeptical to even try?
I'd say move along at your usual fast pace. Don't change anything, like I would say to the eaters. And drop back down into feeling yourself walking fast, feeling yourself rushing from Grand Central to your work in the 40s. Or taking that subway to Wall Street. Just feel it a little bit, open to yourself, and then you're beginning to meditate a little bit.
Right. Oh, I love that.
Go out and play golf and be rushing and into it and all that, and then stop for a second and just take in the majesty of the hills and the grass and the people you're with and the world around. Just for a second, see if you can taste it.
Yeah.
You have time for that. You might not think you do, but you do.
You do. Yeah. I think
Or you eat. One of my first teacher was Joseph Goldstein, the great mindfulness teacher. And he said, take one object a week and make it a mindful practice. So you have an apple in the middle of the afternoon and peanut butter, almond butter. Just taste it for the first time. One of my theories of overweight is not just video games and everything else and people are more sedentary. It's also people are not really eating. And so if they're not eating, they're not feeling joy because they're not really tasting. So then they have to rush the next bite to, because they're not really there. Yeah. I volunteered years ago on Long Island on the South Shore, a drug treatment center for teenagers. And the idea was if they were going to go off drugs, they were going to actually feel more pain and they need to have alternative practices. This was my pitch to the director. So I said, let me teach them yoga and meditation, which I did. And a young woman, about 16, at the end of it was like 8 or 10 weeks. She said, Jeffrey, when you came here, I would listen to music, but not hear it. I would look but not see. I would eat but not taste. Now yeah. I'm tasting when I'm eating. I'm seeing when I'm looking. It was beautiful, the transition she went through. We can all learn to do that too, wherever we are in our lives.
Yes. I love that. Now, you spent nearly 40 years helping people move from suffering and mental noise toward genuine peace and flourishing. So what do you, want every person listening to understand about their own minds, about the possibility of real inner peace, and about what it truly means to live a flourishing life?
Great question. I want them to realize that others also have agony.
Mm-hmm.
Others also may feel there's no hope or there's no way out, and that their clues buried, there's their wounding. And usually we have a second problem, which is the way we learn to handle the wounding. And that often creates a further problem. Yeah. So the man that's raised that he's not good enough, then he works hard at sports or work to prove he's okay to, let's say, a critical old school dad. And then when he does that, he begins to have somatic complaints. He has more headaches, back pain, because he's working all the time and he feels stress. And so the problem is the earlier wounding, and the problem is the way he's trying to handle the wounding. So sometimes if we can shift the second thing, we can work on the first thing.
Right.
I call it the practice of self-cure. The cure, we're all emotional pharmacies. We yeah. all have our own medication we use, and it's sometimes not quite the right medication.
Yes.
And if we change emotionally, this is a metaphor, and emotionally, if we change it, then something radical can happen. So yes. One thing, so more specifically, I know this can sound airy-fairy, more specifically for the audience, look at what your problems in living are trying to solve rather than judging them and making a diagnosis and pathologizing yourself. Looking at what you're trying to solve and then see if you can find another way of solving it. So right. The woman who feels unloved, who becomes a selfless caregiver, she doing more of that. I once heard a horrifying dream of a woman who cooked a wonderful pasta meal for everyone. They're all in the living room eating it, and she's licking the ladle in the kitchen. And she said, what do you think the dream is saying? That all you're entitled to is the scraps, and you need to be in there with them, serving, cooking, serving, and then eating it and appreciating it.
Exactly.
It would be like you or your mom or your dad cook a great meal, the spanakopita and everything else, and then they're not eating, just serving everyone else. So within what strategy we've used to handle the wound is usually a problem. We
right.
give to feel love. We need to give a little bit less and realize that we're lovable without that, for example.
Exactly.
We need to work a little bit differently and realize we're already one of God's children already, if you look at it that way. We're all made in God's image. Now, that's not just Stacy or Jeffrey. That's all of us.
Yes. So true. So true. Now, can you tell everybody the name of your book again, where they can find it?
Well, there are 8, so it depends which ones. The ones that might relate to your audience are The Art of Flourishing, and they can get that on Random House or Amazon. The other ones, I had 2 that came out this summer, July and September. Well, summer and fall. Psychotherapy Case Studies. : Escaping the Prison You Didn't Know You Were In. That's
wow.
some of what we're really talking about right now. We're all, many of us are in a prison and we don't know it. And the cell is unlocked. It's like the door over there. It's unlocked. But what keeps us there is the way we're trying to handle our earlier wounding, which hurts us. We keep doing as Einstein, who's quoted a lot in 12-step program, we keep doing what doesn't work and expecting different results. We've got to change up what we're doing, as they say. So that's another book, Psychotherapy Case Studies, Escaping the Prison You Didn't Know You Were In. And then the other one is Meditative Psychotherapy and Psychoanalysis, Pathways to Healing and Transformation.
I love it. I love it.
And that's that's my newest integration of East and West.
Really?
I try to write in a very down-to-earth style right now for everyone so that it's accessible to everyone, clients, therapists, spiritual seekers, educated lay people who are just curious lay people. I'm trying to make it accessible to all of you.
I love that. I love that. And also, can you tell us about your services?
Yes, I provide psychotherapy, mostly now in Northern Westchester, and also Zoom and FaceTime. I work with children, adolescents, adults, single adults, couples. I work in a very non-authoritarian way. I try to get a careful sense at the beginning of what the person's strengths are and what they're struggling with. And then I try to uniquely tailor make what we do to that person. I don't do the same thing with each person. That would not be right. Each hour, it's different. The person I'm going to see after this interview, I'm going to work differently with than the person that I saw at 2 o'clock before the interview. It has to be, there's a French thinker who says love has to be reinvented. It's the same thing here. Each relationship is unique. I think of the therapist as a jazz improviser who's grounded in the basics and the fundamentals, but can spring from them in the moment. So that's the way I try to practice.
I love that. Now, can you tell everybody your website where they can find you?
Yes, drjeffreyrubin.com. And feel free to reach out. It's not imposing. Sometimes people might be intrigued by something we said or confused, and then they don't want a burden or they don't think I have the time. Wherever I am, it's not for me to say, but wherever I am, I stood on the shoulders of several mentors that really, really generously gave to me. And so I love passing it on. It feels like it honors my teachers to pass it on to other people. So feel free to reach out if anything Stacey or I said is unclear, if you want to dialogue, if you disagree with something, it's okay. Feel free to reach out and we'll continue the conversation.
I love that. Now, for the listeners out there, it turns out the piece where we're all chasing was never going to come from thinking harder or achieving more. It comes from learning to quiet the mind and to nourish the deeper parts of ourselves, which we actually often ignore. Now, Dr. Jeffrey Rubin has spent a lifetime showing people the way, there. And today he now gave us a beautiful glimpse of what's possible when we bring together the wisdom of the mind and the stillness of the spirit. And I thank you so much for being here. And, once again, let everyone know your websites and where they can find it. And you're also going to be revamping all your social networks. So you're going to have like a whole new look to your social network. So they can find you on your social networks, but you're going to give them a little surprise because you're recreating everything.
Exactly. Yeah, I want to connect and touch more people. So I'm trying to make it more, accessible and so forth.
I love it. I love it.
I've been focusing on healing. Now I want to focus on healing, but also building bridges with people. Because what people out there are really hurting, whatever political side of the political island, what we can do is be there for each other, and be there more, as you were saying before we started today, that's often makes the difference. It can save someone's life just to listen to a person in pain. So I want to create better bridges with people and connect with more people and so forth.
I love that idea. And I think it's so important because I think a lot of the bridges that we go on today have a gap. And to close those gaps, I think are so important and can do so much good.
Thank you for what you do. It's very, very important. You can take it for granted after a while, but don't take it for granted, Stacey. It's a huge gift. It really is.
Oh, Thank you. If this conversation brought you a sense of calm, share it with someone whose mind could use a little peace today. And Dr. Rubin, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You were amazing. And your insights, your strategies, your tools, everything that you provided today had such powerful meaning. The exercises that you provided were so beneficial. They actually helped me even connect with myself better and bring me to a level of calmness that I wasn't before we started the show. And I think you really have a beautiful gift yourself. And I thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge and sharing your wisdom and for writing all those books. So I encourage others to read those books, and it could really make a huge impact on your life, especially if you're searching and you really need to improve your life and want to combine a different way of living to help you feel better as a person.
But yeah, medicine is widely defined. So it's not just medicine, it's walking, it's friendship, it's the medicine we have to look at in a wider way.
Exactly. You couldn't say it better. Well, I thank you so much, Dr. Rubin. This has been amazing. I hope you'll be back on the show.
I'd love to be. Just let me know and I'll be there.
Love it. And thank you once again. You've been wonderful, and I really love what you do.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you. Good meeting you, and I'll speak to you. Take care.
Bye. You too.
Bye.